Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, March the 15th. And today we're going to talk about politics and Texas. And when we do that, of course, we have this very handsome young man on the other side of the screen, George Rodriguez from South Texas. George, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's an interesting time to live in Texas. And tonight we're going to talk about the energy issue and how it could benefit Texas and how Texas could actually benefit the country. So that, a potential role here in the, on the part of Texas to actually bring down these gasoline prices. We're also going to talk about the Beto campaign, some interesting quotes coming out of the Beto campaign, to say the least, and then we'll get an update from you on what's happening down on the border with Mr. Cuellar and Ms. Cisneros. And a really, really interesting runoff down on the border that I think tells us a great deal about what's happening in the Democrat Party. But let me begin with a quick story that you send me, and then I saw some other things on my own. There was a very dramatic shootout in Nuevo Laredo, which is, of course, on the other side of Laredo, Texas. And if you saw the scenes on the television, as I did this afternoon, it was pretty violent. I mean, this was not a couple of people shooting at each other. There were big fire trucks and, you know, big trucks on fire and everything. And I think it tells me a couple of things, George. Number one, how unsafe it is. Number two, how much power these cartels have. What incredible ammunition they have that they can do something like this. And it's a warning. It's a warning of how important it is to secure the border. I'm not sure if the Mexican government can do anything about it. They've tried. I mean, in all fairness, they've tried. But these cartels are awfully powerful, George. So what can you tell us about this incredible shootout?
Well, I've been in contact with several reporters, both on this side and on the other side of the river in the Mexican side. And what happened was that there was an arrest of one of the leading cartel leaders of the Zetas, which is probably the second most powerful cartel in Mexico. Now, what's very, very interesting in that is that there would be an arrest of this cartel leader because historically the in the past couple of years, the president of Mexico, López Obrador, has tried actually to stay away from any major arrest. I mean, he's gone after captains and minor characters, but he's really stayed away from big leaders. And this guy is considered one of the major players in Mexico. So he was arrested. And immediately there was a response from his henchmen. If you recall, there was a similar response when the son of Chapo was arrested in Culhuacan, Sinaloa. The cartels all came out, the gangs all came out to defend and, well, actually to release him. And they fought the government and the police to a complete standstill. In fact, they were winning. And López Obrador, the president, went ahead and released him. Well, in this case, he didn't get released. He was arrested. There's very, very strong, there are strong indications that he will be turned over to the United States and that he will be prosecuted in the U.S. in the next couple of weeks. Because of that U.S. connection, the cartels also attacked the U.S. consulate in Laredo. There was also a show of force, so to speak, as you saw in the videos, by the cartel attacking the local military base and also attacking the prestigious neighborhoods of Nuevo Laredo where the political class lives. They wanted to send a very, very strong message. They did send a very, very strong message. Unfortunately, I think that this is something that we're going to see from now on. I don't think that there is going to be any major action by the Mexican government against any cartels, because they're going to have this kind of response. This response is going to be standard.
Right. I think it's interesting for some of the folks who may not be familiar with some recent history. These cartels are pretty vicious. They've got a lot of ammunition, to say the least. They've got a lot of weapons. I mean, they have the best weapons.
Very well armed.
Very well armed. They're very well organized. I mean, this is not a bunch of people. These are very well organized, almost in a paramilitary way. But I thought what was really interesting about the cartels that, George, a couple of years ago, when COVID was hitting parts of Mexico very hard, that the women of the cartels were actually handing out hand wash, you know.
Yes.
So they have a sense for the people. I mean, they believe that
they have a Robin Hood approach.
Exactly. They have a sort of win hearts and minds, as we like to say, of the people. So they're very smart. They know what they're doing. And you're right. They want to intimidate the political class. I also heard something on another report that they also want to intimidate the press.
Oh,
you know, there have been,
yes,
there have been already, George, five journalists
That's
killed
right.
in Mexico this year.
Yes.
I mean, being a journalist in Mexico right now, it's a pretty dangerous job.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous job. Especially if you decide to be a reporter.
Yes.
And that is, you decide to report what's going on. Or if you report anything about the cartels, you put a target on your back. So I think, you know, part of it is a Mexican problem, obviously. Part of it is a border problem, as we've talked about before. And, you know, when you have these kinds of shootouts happening literally across from your neighborhood, as is happening here. I mean, Nuevo Laredo, I mean, you drive 2 minutes and you're one city into the other. I've done it. And it's just amazing. So it just goes to emphasize once again how important it is to keep an eye on the border. This is a serious problem, what is happening on the border. And these cartels are now diversifying not only into these drugs that they've always done, but now, apparently into even the business of avocado. So, I mean, they're smart. I mean, these are not dumb people. These are, you know, in many cases, these are organizations. I remember reading a story one time. They have a bunch of Harvard MBAs who are literally running the financial side. These are not dumb people. These are very, very smart people who know exactly what they're doing. Let me ask you a quick question, not at all about Texas, but I have a post coming out Wednesday morning calling on the Republicans in the U.S. Senate to demand that the Iran nuclear deal, if it gets done, I mean, it may never get done, but if it gets done, that it should be submitted as a treaty, as the Constitution calls for. Your thoughts on that, George?
Definitely. I mean, it's got to be done that way. Anytime that we have any kind of an agreement with another nation, it should be treated as a treaty, and it should follow the constitutional framework. This situation of an executive cutting a deal and then holding the rest of the country responsible, I mean, that smacks of a dictatorship. I'm sorry. I can't describe it any other form.
No, that's it. That's it. I mean, this should be, and actually, it would be smart for Biden to send it as a treaty, because then if nothing else, he'd probably get a better deal, or at least he'd be in a stronger position to negotiate, saying, I cannot get that approved by the Congress. I cannot get that approved by. So he's in a stronger position to negotiate when he knows that the Senate is with him. So I hope he does. I understand Senator Cruz is insisting on that. I also think, George, that it projects a lack of seriousness when we're conducting foreign policy like this. We have a president who signs an executive agreement, and then next guy comes in, erases the agreement.
Exactly.
It's a lack of seriousness. Foreign policy should be more serious than that.
Well, it's too political. When they do it, it's too political.
Well, if you remember when President Obama sent the original Iran nuclear deal to the Senate, he didn't get 50 votes.
He didn't.
He didn't get 50 votes.
And the reasoning being, why would you want to deal with the world's number one terrorist country? I mean, why would you want to do that? That's like trading nuclear arms with North Korea. I mean, why do you want to do that? Nevertheless, I am not sure what the thinking is, but here they go. Here they're going to do it.
Well, they're thinking about doing it. They think they're going to do it, but I'm not sure that that the public is with him on this. So I think if he's smart, he'll send it to the Senate, and at least he can blame the Senate if it doesn't go through. I think in its current form, it would not get all 67 votes.
Well, it depends on how bad they want to do it, because, I mean, let's face it, Obama ignored the Senate, the Congress, and went ahead and did it. So theoretically, he could do the same.
Well, you know, President Obama did it twice. He did it with the Paris Climate Change Accords.
Yes.
That were never submitted to the Senate of Iran nuclear, with the Iran nuclear deal. We'll see how it goes. But I think it would be smart for the Biden administration and the country to go through the constitutional process. Well, let's talk a little bit about...
It would be legal. It would legitimize it, that's for sure.
Well, that's right. It's constitutional. I guess we forgot about that one, Constitution. Well, let's talk a little bit about Texas and energy, because all this talk about high gas prices, we're paying roughly $4, between $4 and $4.09 is the price here in the Dallas area. What's it down in San Antonio?
Yeah, I just filled up my truck, $120. It was at one station at one part of one end of the block. It was $4.01 yesterday, and then today, my understanding is that because Biden has released some reserves, it came down to $3.98.
Right. Yeah.
It is really, really crazy how the Democrats are carrying on about this energy crisis that we've got.
Right. We just have to get an electric car, George. That's the answer.
Of course,
get an electric car.
Electricity comes out of the air.
Electricity comes out of the clouds. Yeah, it doesn't. They don't understand that it comes out of a power plant of some type. But it would be so beneficial for the country if Texas, in a sense, was allowed to unleash. We have so much energy. Alaska has so much energy. Just Alaska and Texas would take care of the country. And something else too, George, I've seen polling data where overwhelming majorities of Americans are saying, hey, let's drill our own oil. Why depend on other people? So I think, you know, President Biden is losing this argument with the American people. I mean, they're blaming this on Putin. And obviously the invasion of Ukraine had an impact, no question about it. But I think what the invasion of Ukraine shows me is how insane it is to be energy dependent.
Exactly.
That the key is to be energy independent. So whatever happens, happens, but it doesn't impact our gasoline prices a dramatic way. So let's hope that Texas can take the country. Now, I thought it was interesting getting into our next topic of Beto O'Rourke, because I saw an interview with Beto O'Rourke. He's been saying a lot of things lately. And I saw like a press conference or a constituent type conference where people would ask him questions, where he basically say that we should be energy independent or drill for our own oil. Beto is having a conversion on lots and lots of issues. But the question is this playing with his base? It's not playing with me, and I assume not with you either. But is it playing with his base, the people who are going to have to show up to vote in November, who must be looking at him saying, you know, I remembered when you said something else, George.
The, you know, it's obvious that all of the Beto is in the same boat with all the other Democrats, including Biden, that they are the hostages of the green radicals, of the environmentalists that support the green plan. And they are just not going to back off. They are not going, I mean, to them, it is a religion. To them, being green is a religion. Getting rid of fossil fuels is a religion. And when Beto talks about this whole situation that somehow he is going to encourage energy independence for Texas and that he is going to encourage Texas to be a leader in energy, I mean, that disturbs them beyond belief. And so I just, you know, I cannot see that he is going to hold on to that base very much longer. Mm-hmm. The other problem is that folks like yourself and I, majority of Republicans, majority of independents, they don't believe him. Mm-hmm. They don't believe mm-hmm. him. So, I mean, this is a guy who is now flip-flopping, and it's very obvious that he's flip-flopping. How are you gonna feel comfortable going with someone who one minute is over there and the next minute he's over
right.
there?
Well, it comes across so, I think the right word is craven political. It just comes
yeah.
across as so political and so convenient. I mean, it would almost be more impressive if he would stick to his old positions and say, look, this is what I said. This is what I believe. If you don't want to vote for me, don't vote for me.
Yeah.
But that, I think, would show more courage. But he seems to be, like the other day, for example, he said that he didn't think that CRT, you know, critical race theory, should be taught in schools, that it should be taught like in law schools. You know, that is such a convenient way of dancing around the issue. I just don't think that most people are going to buy that. And the other point, George, that he makes over and over and over again, he keeps talking about how, you know, such X percentage of kids cannot read and write. And, you know, he's basically saying that our educational system is, I guess we're not paying teachers enough or that our educational system is failing. But then he turns around and endorses the system that is failing.
Correct.
I mean, if you're going to tell me that we should spend more money on education, but, you know, we have X number of kids who are graduating who cannot read and write, I think as a parent, I should ask the question, what am I paying for? Would my money be better spent somewhere else, George?
You know, President Eisenhower made the comment, he called it the military-industrial complex way back when in the 50s. I think what we've got now is a very powerful educational-industrial complex. And this education industry doesn't care anything about anything other than sustaining itself, motivating people to give it more money and give it more power.
Right.
And the education industry is holding the Democrats. Well, I'm not going to say that it holds them hostage, but it's certainly influential in their lives a whole lot more than what we want, because the educational industry cares about the educational industry. They don't care about the student. They don't care about the education. If they did, we would not be losing the educational levels, the academic achievement of children. We would not be losing it as we have lost it over the past 20 years.
Right. And more and more parents are looking to get their kids out of public schools.
Yes.
Another phenomenon that you're seeing in many places. And a lot of it is simply a reflection, hey, this is what we're paying for the schools. The schools are not producing.
Right.
Maybe we should try something else. But I find it interesting that Beto, on one hand, would basically say, you know, we need to pay our teachers more. And I think a lot of parents are saying, that's okay. I mean, nobody's against paying teachers more money. I'm not. Nobody really is. but it's more the educational system that is not producing results. Now, I think if Beto would say, you know, we got to get more parents involved.
He'd really hit a home run with that one.
Yeah, because I actually think that's the key in many places. Yeah. Show me a mom and dad interested in their kid's education.
And we'll see how successful kid.
That's right. I'll show you a kid who's at least doing their homework. Yeah, let's just put exactly. it that way and succeeding. So it's just interesting. And what can you say about his crowds? I mean, is he obviously in 2018, he had everything going for him. But what can you say about the crowds that he's getting? I don't see a lot of people showing up for Beto. I don't see anybody talking about Beto. I don't see any commercials for Beto. So maybe it's too early. I don't know.
Yeah, well, once again, from what I have seen here in San Antonio personally, the visits that he's made, not only are the crowds small, the enthusiasm is also very small. I mean, the enthusiastic level for AOC three weeks ago when she was in town, it was a small crowd, but they were loud and screaming and boisterous. You don't see that with Beto's crowd. You don't see it. And I think that should be an indicator. That should be a telltale sign for him. Not only is the crowd small, they're just not into it.
Right. Well, the turnouts too in the primaries were amazing for the Republicans and not exactly great for the Democrats. Now, the Democrats will say, well, we didn't have a lot of competitive races, which they didn't, I guess. I mean, they didn't have a Paxton Bush type race statewide. So that, I think,
other thing that they're saying is that their mail-in votes got canceled.
In one county, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you know, there were something, I think, like 27,000 across
right.
the state that were discounted because they weren't filled out properly,
right.
Because they didn't have IDs and whatnot. But I mean, again, Democrats are looking for an excuse why they're just not having the enthusiasm. And,
right.
you know, if you want to know why you're not having enthusiasm, go fill your car up or go to the border.
That's right. Yeah. Check out go put some gasoline in your car and we'll get that. That'll give you a real enthusiasm test very quickly. You're right about that. Now, the other very fascinating race is what's going on in District 28 or South Texas, which is, of course, between Henry Cuellar, the incumbent Democrat, and Jessica Cisneros, who is, the challenger in the primary. That came pretty much a tie. Was the third candidate who pulled like four points or 4%. It'd be interesting to hear from you, George. What are you hearing about that race? And do you feel that Cuellar is just going to get those extra points to get over 50 because he didn't have it in the first round, George?
Well, I'm hearing a whole lot more enthusiasm from the Cuellar camp now. And I'm not sure if I should call it enthusiasm as much as I should call it panic. They really didn't think that she was going to get that close. And now they recognize that she may win. So there is a real effort to go out and motivate and generate excitement among the moderates, among the independents from San Antonio down to Laredo. And there were several candidates on the Republican side that you would consider moderate, who have been courted like crazy by the Cuellar campaign. Now, as far as the Cisneros campaign goes, there is an article that surfaced over the weekend regarding Jessica having had an affair when she was in high school with one of her teachers. And what's interesting on that is two things. First of all, obviously, it shows her character, even though that she was, you know, a young girl, she has never backed off of that affair, even now. The other thing that it shows is how the mainstream media, both in Laredo and here in San Antonio, have not chosen to say anything about that story. They haven't surfaced it. They haven't focused on it. That came out, the story actually came out of the Daily Mail, a British newspaper. And
you
so,
I'm telling you something. People in the audience have got to read the London newspaper because they're the only one apparently covering politics in the United States. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the same thing happened when Obama was president.
Yes.
I mean, the British press was not, you know, madly intoxicated with Obama. By the way, I just wanted to quote a couple of comments that we're getting here, George, that are fascinating. One friend here said that Beto is a liar. So let's just say that.
Why doesn't he say what he really thinks?
right. So I think we're gonna do a check mark on that because that's a pretty good line. Beto is a liar. I have a feeling that the Abbott campaign may use that one. The other. This one's fascinating. This is from a lady in, who lives in the West Coast, and this is her first loan. Good at $4. Here in California, it's $5, $6 to $7.
Yeah.
So I guess George. With all due respect to the lady from California, maybe we shouldn't complain.
Yeah.
That $4 is, I don't like it, and I'll complain, but when I hear that,
well, one of the
seven,
things,
that's pretty
you
incredible.
Know, on this complaining issue, one of the things that I found to be very, very disingenuous the other day was on MSNBC, where somebody actually made the comment that we should not be complaining about the price of gasoline when there are people living on floors and being bombed in the Ukraine. Now, once again, here we go shaming Americans for being Americans. Here we go shaming Americans because we want to maintain a certain standard of life. The headache is, and it's very, very obvious, that unless America is strong, and that includes being energy independent, which by definition would bring down the price of gasoline. But unless we are strong, unless we are independent, unless we are able to sustain ourselves, we can't help Ukraine. Right. We cannot help the rest of the world.
Right.
And the reason everybody has beaten a path to the United States is because the United States has always had an economy where we take care of ourselves, where we grow, where we allow anybody to come in and grow. And now we're being shamed because somehow we want a good standard of living?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It is. And actually, George, you can believe both things. You can believe that it's terrible what's happening in Ukraine. You can also believe that our gasoline is too expensive.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't see a conflict between those two things at all. But let me tell you, I think what's becoming more and more apparent, George, is how correct the Trump view was with respect to energy.
You think?
Because I think I just figured that one out, George. But I mean, when you think about it, Trump understood that the price of oil was essential to the family budget. If you're a family, and you pay $2 for a gallon of gasoline, that means that I can fill my car for $25. Now I got to pay $55 or whatever. That makes a big difference in your family budget. And I'm not even talking about the inflation that's already hitting us because of that price of oil. But the other thing, and perhaps more important, what Ukraine is teaching us, how important oil is as a geopolitical weapon, that, you know, you give, look, Russia, I've been told that Russia is nothing but a gas station. That's it. They're just a gasoline station. And basically, they just have oil. And that's all they have. So when that oil is $40 a barrel, that gasoline station doesn't sell as much or doesn't have as much power, let's say, as when the barrel is 130. And I think that, to me, is the genius, or was the genius, energy policy, that he understood the impact that it has on
it's
the family
an economic
budget.
War.
That's
what
it.
What we are waging is an economic war. A Cold War is an economic war. And unfortunately, we have so many people that just don't seem to understand that. If we, in an economic war, we have got to put the economy of the United States number one, America first. And unfortunately, we just seem to be the leadership currently, particularly the Democrats, particularly the Green people, they seem to be just so out of touch with reality.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
I mean, it's like, for example, the transportation secretary saying that, well, you know, gee, you know, we should be driving electric cars. Well, first of all, they're $50,000 each. I don't know if the transportation say, yeah, I don't know if he's actually looked for one. They're very expensive. Number two, where does this, like you say, where does this energy come from? You know, I've said it many times. I'm not against renewables. I'm not against alternatives to oil. But please show me that they work. And
exactly.
Show me that you can run an economy.
Make it affordable.
Another point.
That's the biggest problem. I mean,
the thing, yeah.
If it's not affordable, then, you know, by definition, it's not going to work.
That's right. And you know, so, you know, we can try, you know, experiment here and experiment there. But the truth is, the overwhelming majority of people in this country move by gasoline. The majority of products are moved by gasoline, the buses, the trucks, everything. And we can gradually convert. I'm not against that. But we can't just do it from one day to the other.
Yeah. Exactly.
These green people live in a, like you say, in a total fantasy. And what's interesting to me is that I think that it's interesting, but I think to sort of wrap up this, I actually think that what we have lived through in the last 14 months has done a tremendous harm to the green movement. That, you know, the green movement as
they are their worst enemies.
That's it. As a political movement, they're going to have a very hard time selling to the American people that we should just move in this Green New Deal. You can forget that Green New Deal. That's not going to happen because the American people have seen the consequences of not having oil.
The spokesperson for the Green Movement here in San Antonio the other day was having a rally with about 30 people. At City Hall, and this guy looks like a leftover from the 1960s. He rides a bicycle. He's very proud to proclaim that he is on welfare. How the heck does he relate to a businessman?
He doesn't.
To a small business. I mean, how the heck does he relate to people who actually work?
He doesn't. And that, I mean, he walks into a businessman selling that message. And the businessman says, look, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I can't talk to you right now.
Go
somewhere else. Yeah. go sing Blowing with the Wind.
Yeah, right.
At the next, go to the park and start singing Blowing with the Wind, because that's not going to fly here in my business. George, I know you get around the state a little bit, traveling, and what's your next speaking engagement?
Actually, I just got a call yesterday that I am going to Washington, D.C. next month on the 14th for a meeting with the Heritage Foundation, the very prestigious Heritage Foundation, regarding the issues of economic freedom and liberty, of which energy independence is number one. We're also going to be talking, of course, about the crisis on the border.
Yes, and the crisis on the border, as we talked about at the beginning of the video today, the crisis on the border is not getting any better. And this administration, and by the way, that's another. When you look at the ratings of this administration, I mean, people say it's 40% overall. But when you look inside the numbers, I mean, I wrote an article the other day called The 30-Something Man, because if you look at the ratings, on the border is 33 on inflation. I mean, he's under 40 on lots of the important issues that matter to the American people. So he's in trouble.
The New York Times said he got a bump after the State of the Union. He got up to the 40s.
Oh, he did. Well, yeah. Can you call your friend at the New York Times and tell him that it went down?
It's back down again.
Yeah, it's like disappeared. You know, it was the quickest bump in the history. But that raises an interesting point, George. Presidents usually get like a week or 2 week bump from the State of the Union, and also they get a
honeymoon.
Bump. Yeah, but they also get a bump from a foreign policy crisis.
Correct.
And this has not happened here.
This is not happening.
This is not happening in anything. And even though most Americans don't want to go to war, probably support that, I think a lot of Americans, and you cannot prove this, okay? There's no way you can prove this. But a growing number of Americans are now saying that this would not have happened under Trump. And I know you cannot prove that.
And you know, and again, you don't have to say that. What you can say, though, is that if there is a strong America, if there is a strong America with a strong resolve, bullies are less likely to pick on you.
I agree.
Bullies are less likely to pick on your friends. However, that's not the situation that we've got right now. We've got a situation right now where we project weakness. We project love. You know, we project the John Lennon song. Let's, you know, imagine there's no heaven. You know, when you do that, the bullies are going to come. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. And again, for people who remember, if you're old enough to remember, this is starting to look a lot like the last 12 months of the Carter administration. If anybody remembers that.
Oh, the Carter administration.
Yeah, the last 12 months when there was a sense in the country that nothing could go right. That's what this is starting to look like. Well,
correct.
George, thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope that you have a good trip to Washington. When you get back, you got to tell us about it.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Thank you for watching. Thank you for enjoying our chat with George. And we'll do it again when he gets back from Washington. Maybe he can tell us how the baseball season is going up in Washington now that the baseball season is back in place. Good night. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. And we'll do it again. Good night, everybody.